It is your Thursday Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day. Hope you guys are having a great day out there as well. A different kind of show, but a great one coming up. Susan Sheridan Tucker from the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling will join me here in a little bit to talk about March being Problem Gambling Awareness Month, ongoing efforts to legalize sports betting in Minnesota and what that might mean for her organization and how that could impact the more than 250,000 Minnesotans who are estimated right now to have a gambling problem. Now, I've mentioned this before, but I am one of those 250,000 Minnesotans who have battled a gambling problem. I'm in recovery right now. Have been for almost 2 years, but she and I will certainly talk about my journey and my recovery as well. After that conversation, I will get into a bonkers story involving Shohei Ohtani, his interpreter, millions of dollars in gambling debt to an illegal bookmaking ring, and the fallout from that ESPN story that broke yesterday that is just unbelievable. You'll have to piece this all together and figure out what this all means, but we'll get to that after the interview with Susan Sheridan Tucker. First, though, what I miss, another wild story and a story about the Wild. So a couple things in this first segment. One, the Wild game, but first, a wild story reporting in the Star Tribune. Chris Hine and Paul Walsh from the Star Tribune. I can't stop thinking about this story or looking at this story, so I got to share it with you guys if you haven't seen it yet. Headline, I'm just going to read straight from it because this is the kind of story that's so kind of delicate, so important to get right that I don't want to mislabel anything. So I'm just going to read straight from the story. The headline, Timberwolves executive had hard drive stolen with, quote, strategic NBA information on it, copied, charge says. Reading from the top of the story, a work hard drive holding sensitive strategic information was stolen from the Target Center office of the head of the Timberwolves analytics department and copied last month by a disgruntled subordinate, according to a criminal complaint filed Wednesday. Sachin Gupta, who you'll remember, guys, I'm not reading straight from the story at this point. He was basically in charge of the Wolves a couple of years ago in the interim after Gerson Rosas was gone and before Tim Connelly was hired. So back to the story. Sachin Gupta got the hard drive back a little more than a week later, but not before roughly 5,700 files were copied that held employment and player contracts as well as strategic NBA information. Also on the hard drive were Gupta's tax returns and other financial information and his login and passwords from a password management app, the complaint read. As head of the analytics department, Gupta had sensitive proprietary data in his possession that the Wolves conceal from other teams, like information about players and decision-making, contracts, or trade negotiations. The dissemination of information of that nature to other teams could be damaging to the success of the Wolves in the highly competitive NBA. The team fired Somak Sarkar, 33, after learning of the hard drive's disappearance. He was arrested Monday and charged in Hennepin County District Court with felony third-degree burglary. Sarkari means jailed with bail set at $40,000 ahead of a court appearance Thursday. That is today. Questioned by police after his arrest, Sarkar said that as a member of the coaching staff, he had Gupta's hard drive to, quote, put some stuff on it, quote, but forgot to return it, according to the complaint. Wow. Digest all of that for a minute. Now back to the story. According to court documents, Gupta met with police March 4th and said Sarkar had worked in analytics for the coaches until last summer, but was reassigned. Gupta told Sarkar of the transfer over a beer. Gupta said he thought the news went down well, but that Sarkar became standoffish from that point. On February 2nd, Gupta left his hard drive on his desk connected to one of his two laptops. Late in the afternoon of February 3rd, a Saturday, security video captured Sarkar entering Gupta's office. He then exited, looked around, went back into the office, and left a minute later. Gupta came back to work February 5th and saw his hard drive was missing. On February 9th, Sarkar was fired without explanation and escorted by security from the building. An analysis of Sarkar's work computer found that he used his device to open Gupta's hard drive. I don't know where this story is going, but I've read stories like this in the past about other teams. Now that it's happening to the Wolves, this is absolutely wild. I don't have like a ton of commentary on it. I just wanted to make sure you guys heard about this story. Go read the whole thing. Like I said, there's a court appearance today. I cannot wait to read more about this story. I think sometimes proprietary information can be overblown, but Gupta has a lot of, you know, clout, pull in the organization. He would be the guy that has a lot of potentially sensitive information. So, you know, from a competitive standpoint, I don't think this is necessarily like a red flag right away, but watch for that down the road as well, and just watch as this story develops. That Wild story was certainly better than the story about the Wild missing an opportunity Wednesday night, playing in LA back-to-back. Marc-Andre Fleury's been on a roll. He gets pulled, though. They get shellacked 6-0. They had a chance to pull within a point of Vegas in the standings, but Vegas has played two fewer games. So now they're three back of Vegas. Vegas has got two games in hand on the Wild. Chance to pull closer to LA, too, which could end up being the wild card team if Vegas surges and LA stumbles. But that was one you would have liked to have. If they would have won that game last night, then you could say, okay, they are within legitimate striking distance. They've still got two games left against Vegas later this year. You could say, okay, if they win both of those games, then they're really in the driver's seat. This doesn't take them out of it, but it does make them more dependent in the playoff chase on the teams above them stumbling. So just a disappointing result. You know, listening to some of the players talk after the game, it kind of sounded like they thought it was a matter of bad bounces in some cases, bad luck, that they didn't play the worst game they've played. They felt like they played a decent game in a lot of cases, but 6-0, that doesn't lie at the end of the day. 6-0 is a lot of bad bounces, a lot of chances. I know that sometimes it can snowball like that, but a bad time for a game like that, at the very least, regardless of how you want to parse how they played. Jonas Brodin didn't play after being injured the game before. He had an MRI. That is not good news. Joel Eriksson Ek didn't play again. He is still trying to return from injury, so they're a little bit banged up at some key spots. That also played a role in their performance. But again, a team that can't afford to drop points dropped a game against a team it couldn't afford to lose to, and that is damaging to their playoff push.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
I am very happy to be joined today by Susan Sheridan Tucker, Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling. March Madness is here, Susan. This is this is Problem Gambling Awareness Month. Probably no coincidence that it's March, because this is a heavy betting month. But welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to talk with you.
I am too. It's a big time, not just because this is March Madness, Susan, but because we are right in the midst of kind of a yearly debate, it seems. This has been going on for a few years now, at least a few years, of is sports betting going to become legal in Minnesota? It's legal in a lot of states. Probably about 3/4 of the states right now have some form of it. But there's been some twists and turns at this point. Where is the legislative kind of back and forth at right now before we get into some of the good work that your organization is doing?
So we've got two bills in play, basically on the House side and the Senate side. And right now they're reading fairly differently. And so we are looking at it very carefully to see what, you know, there's going to be a lot of trading back and forth probably towards the end of session with regard to how the tax revenue is going to be distributed.
Okay.
Wait and see, really. I think there's still some changes that will happen. According to today's newspaper, a deal was struck essentially with the charitable organizations for them to receive additional money since their situation was changed last session, and they were going to see quite a reduction in tax revenue. Our budget was also cut with that, as it turns out. So it's kind of the strange relationship this organization has with gambling funding, because all of our funding comes from the gambling tax revenue collected by the state.
Which is interesting because, in reading more about what the Alliance does, you frame yourselves as a gambling neutral organization. What exactly does that mean, and how does that kind of frame up what you do?
So we are not anti-gambling. However, we want to make sure that anyone who engages in a gambling activity, that it's done in a safe way, that they understand the risks. And then for those that have lost control because of their addiction, that there are services available for them to receive treatment, but also that the gaming industry has a responsibility as well. It's not just the gambler that needs to protect themselves. It's, the industry has a responsibility in this. And so by declaring neutrality, it enables us to bring all the stakeholders together to have conversations with regard to the 2 to 4% of the population that is afflicted with gambling disorder, and then the larger percentage of 6 to 10%, numbers vary, for those that fall on that spectrum of problem gambling.
Okay, so that's interesting. And part of what I wanted to talk to you about today is I am part of that spectrum. I don't know if I've shared this with listeners before, but I am a recovering problem gambler. Poker was my game of choice, so this is not so the sports betting bill that's going through right now is not so much that wasn't exactly where I fell into trouble, but it's been almost 2 years now since I last gambled, and I feel like I'm in a good place. I've been to, through Gamblers Anonymous meetings. I've been through a lot of kind of the process of healing. But that seems that's a big number. That kind of surprises me when you say that, because it's a lot of people in Minnesota who fall on that spectrum, even before we talk about an expansion of legal gambling here.
Right. And I do want people to understand that 250,000 people right now are indicating that they have problems. And we have 6,000 high school students who are also indicating problems.
In
So that's
Minnesota, yes.
in Minnesota. So that's before we even start with the legalization of sports betting. Now, part of the argument is that by legalizing sports betting, it will bring people from the dark market, the offshore sites, which absolutely will happen. There will be people who shift over. But that's not to say they're not already problem gamblers. I mean, it's hard to know. But we do know that with electronic gambling, as what is being discussed with the sports betting bill, that many more people will become engaged with sports betting. I mean, that's been shown across the country already in the 38 states that have passed sports betting. And statistically, we know that there's going to be a percentage of those people who become addicted to gambling. What the trajectory in terms of the time frame, it's hard to know. And part of the reason it's hard to know is that we've never used electronic devices like this before.
Right.
And so it's really hard to know how people are going to self-regulate. Because when you've got something in your hand that you can, there's no friction, right? It's just constant, which is why the in-game betting, which was passed in the Senate bill just last week in terms of moving forward to ban in-game betting, that is seen by many as a potential trigger for people with problem gambling, because it keeps them in the heat of it in the moment. Whereas if you had them place their bet at the beginning of the game and they had to wait to the end, it creates a little bit of space.
Well, that to me is the biggest
one of the biggest pieces of this is the mobile devices, and phones are everywhere. They become such a part of our life. This is not just a gambling conversation. This is probably a conversation about how we use our phones in general and how, it has decreased barriers in a lot of behaviors, good or bad. But when you kind of you're right, the kind of friction, or how I kind of phrase it, you kind of take some of the intentionality out of it. Like if you have to go someplace, or if you have to take steps to do something, you are probably less likely to just kind of repeat that behavior over and over. And I've read a little bit of the research, at least so far, saying, hey, like New Jersey was one of the first states that kind of opened up after this was legalized in 2018. They're seeing like three times as many calls now to, problem betting, helplines, things like that. And, some of the counter argument to that is, hey, they're doing that because we're making that number available. We're saying, hey, you can get help, things like that. But how do you see some of the, you're on the net, you're president of the national piece of all this. How do you see this having already played out in that realm, especially with the mobile component to this?
Well, the mobile component definitely has added to the complexity of this issue. I don't think there's any way that we can say that it hasn't had some kind of impact. What it will be and how long it will last, we don't really know, which is why research is so important. And we're looking at New Jersey and New York State because they're some of the earlier states that adopted sports betting. And unfortunately, some of the statistics are quite alarming. That not only are calls going up for the helpline, but we're seeing higher suicide ideation and suicide attempts in New Jersey. And what most people don't understand is that gambling addiction is often cited as having the highest suicide rate of any addiction. That's pretty serious and deserves people's attention.
Well, yeah, and then you think about it, and then we know the research, we know some of the early research, but also there's an active bill right now, and again, your organization is not saying gambling good, gambling bad, but it's hard to kind of reconcile what we've are learning already with maybe what we're going forward with at this point. But I get that your piece is education in a lot of ways. So what are you trying to educate people on? Like how does someone know? I mean, I knew when I had a problem, but how does the average person know when they have a gambling problem? What do you educate them on, and what to do at that point?
Right. So, we often talk to groups whenever we can, and all our services are free. So, I just want to make that point. Anybody can contact us, and we're happy to come out and talk to people. But, there are general signs of problem gambling. People who are spending more time gambling, spending more money, they're lying about their gambling. Their relationships are really starting to be impacted. As somebody becomes more entrenched in their addiction, they become much more isolated because every waking moment essentially is consumed by when am I going to be able to gamble next, and that constant kind of retort because your brain literally has been changed by the addiction, and it's that need for dopamine, among other aspects of the brain that have changed, that it's demanding you to continue because it has said your body has basically been changed to say, I need this to survive. Because if I don't do this, I can't survive. And of course, people dig themselves into dig deeper and deeper holes financially, as well as all sorts of things. I mean, we see higher rates of domestic violence. The longer somebody is addicted to gambling, the greater likelihood they will commit a crime because they've run out of the source that enables them to gamble. Many gamblers will tell you while they were in the heat of their addiction, it's not even about money. It's not that they want to win money, it's being in play, having that action. And that's what's feeding their addiction.
Sounds familiar to me. I mean, for me, it was a very brief escalation and a relatively brief, I'd say 6 months kind of out of control time, but it was definitely it's not pleasant to think back on, but it's weird to think about how most of my life I spent being a occasional recreational gambler. Like I would go once or twice a year to a casino, and that was the extent of my gambling. It really was for, age 18, or I could gamble at 18 in some places, to 45 or whenever it was. I'm 47 now, to the point. But then you're right, COVID happens, I'm kind of bored, I'm isolated, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, here's this thing, and then it becomes more and more and more. And I wonder, I've always wondered, I've talked through this a little bit, but I've wondered this about myself and also about kind of others who do kind of go from it's more healthy gambling to not healthy gambling. Is it the gambling itself that then creates this kind of cascading effect of other problems in your life, or does kind of the do other problems in your life then foretell the fact that you might become addicted to gambling? But what's the chicken and the egg in this scenario as you kind of study this?
Yeah, I think it's both. It's both and. So we know that people who have family histories of addiction and mental health issues are far more susceptible to having a gambling addiction. And in fact, I've talked to people who knew growing up that their household was alcoholic. Right? I'm never going to take a drink because I don't want to see what my parents went through. Yet nobody said anything to them about gambling. So they went into the casino, and sure enough, that's what got triggered. So things, life transitions happen. We see a lot of widows in casinos after their spouses have passed. They're looking for community. And so for people who are in far reaches of the state where there's not a lot going on, the casino can be the place for connectivity in, with friends and whatever. But it also then becomes more dependent, that they're spending more time and isolating themselves. So it's transitions. And then it's also, I think, we have to realize that, particularly with electronic gambling and gaming, the algorithms are being changed almost in real time. So they understand what a player is doing, what a player likes. So, push notifications are often happening, or somebody is indicating they want to cash out, and it's like, well, here's another, $100 bonus to keep you playing.
Right.
So things like that are that's manipulative. And for people who are addicted, it's the worst thing to be able to offer them.
So, given that, what does then responsible gambling look like, if that's kind of the end goal here of a lot of what you're doing? And also, like, with a lot of these electronic forms in play now, like how do you put up different guardrails than maybe you had to put up before? Because it's a different landscape than it was 20 years ago when we didn't, 50, at least 30 years ago when there was nothing like that was available.
Right. Although, honestly, some of the responsible gambling tips or safer gambling tips are basically set a limit. Only spend the money that you can afford to lose and keep everything else out of your way. So, make sure you pay your rent and your food and all of that first. And whatever is discretionary income, okay, if that's what you want to do with it and spend on it, that's it. But don't go dipping into your other pots of money. And so, that's part of it. Now, because there's so much interaction on an electronic device, there's the opportunity for the operators to know fully what the player is doing. So if a player sets a money limit, and says, I'm not going to spend more than 500 today. And then when they get to that point, it should be a full stop. Now, people argue this all the time. So it's okay, tell them that they've reached their limit, but also give them the opportunity to, to go beyond. Some of the changes being offered in Minnesota is to have some cool off period so that if somebody reaches their limit, they have to wait 24 hours or whatever to re-engage, which I think that's common sense, particularly for somebody who doesn't have control, that this is a mechanism that isn't going to solve their gambling addiction, but it may prevent them from draining their bank account that day.
Polling suggests that Minnesotans, by and large, want legalized sports betting. So at a certain point, is this a will of the people issue, or is this not protecting them from themselves, but at least making sure they know what they're getting into? I guess if this is what you really want, these are the things you have to pay attention to.
Exactly. Just like, it takes us, we're not a people, and I'm not meaning Minnesotans, but just human beings in general.
Yes.
We tend to wait until we hit a crisis and then, and then we respond to it. So rather than wait for the crisis, why don't we set up some guardrails, right? So that people will not, the harm will be minimized. We need to educate people as well. And there is no education right now in the schools on gambling addiction, which I just think is ridiculous. We're rolling out a toolkit this month that we're making available to teachers and coaches and parents about problem gambling as well as problem gaming, because the two definitely are intersected and most people don't understand where those intersections are. So just trying to get the word out is not easy.
A few more things for you, Susan Sheridan Tucker, Minnesota Alliance and Problem Gambling. Really enjoying this conversation, an important conversation to have, not just for me, but for anybody who's listening. And, the odds are, based on what you say, that, a lot of people listening are people who gamble. And maybe some of you are people who are wondering if you have some sort of gambling problem at this point. What is the role of like the normalization of all this? We keep seeing ads. You get the line is on ESPN, like ESPN Bet now. I think I just saw something the other day that the NBA wants to and it plans to include like in-game betting options on their League Pass apps, things like that. Like it's becoming so much more widespread. Like the leagues used to run away from this and now they're right there with it. How does that kind of how does that play into, kind of the normalization of this and just kind of where we are with this, with gambling in general and sports betting in general?
Yeah, I mean, normalization is the word. And it's happening lightning fast. I mean, I don't think we're rushing into these legislations. And certainly, I mean, that's the benefit of Minnesota waiting a little while. And I've appreciated some of the legislators who've been very thoughtful about what these guardrails need to be, because it's crazy out there. I mean, it is the Wild West, and we don't know what the full implications of all of this are going to be. We just don't understand it. And so that's why one of the pieces of legislation that I hope will stay intact is that they make aggregated player data available to people who know how to do research on gambling so that we can start to see what really is happening. Because without access to that data, we don't know. And I just think that that's a disservice to the gaming industry as well as to people who become addicted. We should know what the impact of this activity is having on people.
Where do you think we're headed with this? If this does pass this year, which I think there's at least, maybe it's a, not to keep bringing probabilities or odds into this, but if it feels like it's maybe more than 50-50 at this point, based on kind of the recent developments and kind of smoothing out some of these rough spots, like what challenges are there then for your organization, which, has had plenty to do so far, but then you enter this space, like what are you preparing for if this does pass?
Well, it's ironic, as I said earlier, our funding is completely dependent on what gets passed with the sports betting bill. We are named in the House bill. We are not named in the Senate bill at this point. I hope that we will be named, because I believe that we can offer more direct and immediate services to people than if we're tied completely to the Department of Human Services. But it will really depend on how much money actually gets allocated for problem gambling services. I see a huge need to do a statewide public campaign. We created a PSA this past summer. We're rerunning it with a tiny budget on some digital platforms. But statewide, there needs to be conversations and inclusion about the seriousness of this addiction. So we will have a lot of work to do if the budget permits, if we see an increase in our budget, I'll be able to add another person. Our hope is we're trying to develop networks of community leaders around the state who understand the basics of this addiction and can be additional people on the ground so that they can speak to their own community members and lead them to the resources for help. Because we're a tiny little organization. I'm 3.5 people right now, and I just added 1.5 in January. So it's it's a challenge.
That doesn't feel like enough for 250,000 people who have a problem. Just speaking out loud here, that feels like we're not treating the problem seriously enough, especially if we compare it to other addictions. And I don't know what the national response is, or if that covers some of this, but maybe you can talk to that a little bit. Like what's done nationally that maybe, you know, helps to mitigate some of, you know, the fact that you just don't have a lot of funding locally or statewide.
Right. So there is no federal funding for gambling addiction. Gambling addiction is not recognized by SAMHSA or the NIH. So we're all dependent on what the states will give us, which makes it a crazy way to be funded, frankly. We're thankful that Minnesota at least covers treatment for most individuals. I think that's critical. And within the bill, an additional 60 hours could be added for families, because often it's the family member who will seek treatment first prior to the gambler. It takes a gambler 7 to 10 years before they typically will seek treatment. That's a long time, and a lot of damage happens in that period of time. You know, people lose their homes, people lose their marriages, all sorts of things, their jobs. I mean, it's the carnage, unfortunately, is great and deep for many people, and we're just not talking about it.
Given all that, can you just spell out for listeners right now, like what are the resources? I'm sure you have a website, a phone number, just like say those things right now.
Yep.
So we have them out there, please.
So our website, mnapg.org, the helpline number, 1-800-333-4673. And treatment is available at no cost. Counselors can also do telehealth, so you don't have to be physically present in that space. So we really advise people to take advantage of that. I also want to say that Senator Blumenthal in Connecticut recently introduced the GRIT Act on the federal level. So this will be the very first bill introduced to try to get gambling addiction services at the federal level. And what they're doing is looking at the excise tax that is now on the gaming industry and asking for a quarter of that excise tax to be set aside for problem gambling. And you can bet the gambling industry is going to fight tooth and nail for that, because they want to see the excise tax just disappear completely. So it's an uphill battle. It really is. And And we need more people to publicly champion this issue. And I understand fully that many people who are in recovery do not want to come out publicly about their addiction because it's so stigmatized. And there's so many negative attitudes around people who gamble, and we just have to get over that. I mean, everybody is impacted by this addiction. I mean, I've talked to families whose, 90-year-old mother is addicted to gambling. It's not just that old stereotype that is very much planted in our heads from 1950s movies and such. We got to get over that. It's mothers, brothers, sisters, and all shapes, sizes, all nationalities, creeds. I mean, everybody is touched by this.
Yes, I am living proof. I mean, it's, I think back on it and I am, grateful that it didn't get worse, but it was bad enough to know what it was. I'm happily in recovery, never going back. I know a lot of people say that. I firmly believe it. And again, it's been almost, close to 2 years now, July of 22. So I'm feeling like I'm in a good space, and I'm okay talking about it. I don't mind talking about it, but I know what you're saying. Like it is stigmatized. It is, it's not a fun thing to talk about, that's for sure.
Right, but I'm grateful that you are willing to talk a lot about it because so many people aren't, and I just want people to know that if you are feeling like you have issues with your gambling, that there is help out there.
Right.
Don't hide it, and if you're a loved one and you suspect that your spouse or brother or whoever is, having issues, start the conversation. Do it in a non-judgmental way. Talk out of concern, not out of, judgment. Yes, they may have gotten themselves into a deep, deep problem, and some of those holes are hard to get out of, but you can. And I've listened and talked to so many people in recovery that once they made the decision to seek help, it has made all the difference in the world, that their lives are completely different and so much for the better.
Yeah, I again, I'm proof of that. I feel a thousand times better. I mean, a lot of things in my life have changed since that time, and I feel like I'm the person I want to be again. And I probably am better at hiding things. So I think people didn't necessarily know what I was going through at that time, but I know everybody knows within their self like what it feels like to be healthy and what it feels like to not be healthy. And I am far, far healthier now. Still a work in progress, obviously. All of us are works in progress in a lot of ways, but definitely with that aspect of my life, got that under control and in a good place with that. And Susan Sheridan Tucker, really appreciate this conversation. A good one to have right now in this moment. Not just because it's March, but because, like we said, there's momentum right now in Minnesota, and we need to make sure that we're ready for whatever's coming, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. Well, Susan, thank you so much. Again, Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance for Problem Gambling, and I'm sure we might talk again down the road.
Would love to. Thanks, Michael.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Thanks again to Susan Sheridan Tucker from the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling. If anything she said struck a particular chord with you guys, please don't hesitate to use the resources that she laid out during the interview. Use those resources. It is definitely going to be for the better for you. A conversation to keep having, especially, like I said, as Minnesota perhaps gets closer to legalizing sports betting in this legislative session. That brings me to the cooler, which is adjacent to everything else we just talked about. Story out of Los Angeles. Again, just like the first story today, I need to read it to make sure I'm doing it justice. This from ESPN, ESPN.com. The Los Angeles Dodgers interpreter for Shohei Ohtani was fired Wednesday afternoon after questions surrounding at least $4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation set off a series of events. Ipe Mizuhara, the longtime friend and interpreter for Ohtani, incurred the gambling debts to a Southern California bookmaking operation that is under federal investigation, multiple sources told ESPN. How he came to lose his job started with reporters asking questions about the wire transfers. Initially, a spokesman for Ohtani told ESPN the slugger had transferred the funds to cover Mizuhara's gambling debt. The spokesman presented Mizuhara to ESPN for a 90-minute interview Tuesday night, during which Mizuhara laid out his account in great detail. However, as ESPN prepared to publish the story Wednesday, the spokesman disavowed Mizuhara's account and said Ohtani's lawyers would issue a statement. Quote, in the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discovered that Shohei had been the victim of a massive theft, and we are turning the matter over to the authorities. Quote, read the statement from Burke Brettler, LLP. The spokesman declined to answer any further questions, and the statement did not specify whom they believe perpetrated the alleged theft. When asked by ESPN on Wednesday afternoon, after the statement, if he had been accused of theft, Mizuhara said he was told he could not comment, but declined to say by whom. This story... Man, I don't know where this is going. Again, like that wolf story, I think we're going to need some more details at some point, but something about this doesn't quite add up. When you tell one thing, then another version of the story comes out and you're trying to get your, you kind of get your, trying to get your story straight. The only thing that does appear to be, cut and dried is that millions of dollars changed hands in a, in some sort of gambling, gambling situation. And it's hard to say exactly what is going on here, but I'm sure that Major League Baseball wants all of this to be as far away from Ohtani as possible. Of course, Dodgers and Padres playing in the, you know, this opening Major League Baseball series right now. Ohtani played. Apparently, he's still in the lineup, things like that. You know, I don't know how much this will touch him, but this is obviously, you know, the player who is the face of baseball right now. $700 million contract in the offseason, although almost all of it deferred to, you know, well down the road. What a story, what a bombshell to come out right as Major League Baseball is opening play, right as Ohtani is starting his Dodgers career. Again, got to learn more about this, but right now, this sounds like something that we're going to be hearing about for a long, long time. That will do it for me today. Should be more baseball talk, but maybe just more on-field talk on Friday's show. Expecting to have Phil Miller join me to talk Twins. It's been a newsy week for the Twins. Not much of it good news. A lot of injury news. A lot of stuff going on that has unsettled the team a little bit after a really smooth spring for the first month. So Phil and I will talk about that on Friday's show. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Back at it again tomorrow.